Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. This is the Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, pop art painter Jamie Rocks, and this is the big show. We are, I'm actually in South Florida right now, and we are having a terrible storm down here. Crazy storm just blowing off the beach. But we're going to make it through, ladies and gentlemen, make it through, because I'm very, very excited tonight. We've got a fantastic musician, filmmaker, man of extraordinary talents, Mr. Paul Gervasi. Hopefully I'm saying that right, Paul.
Hey, fantastic film.
Hey, how are you, Paul? I was just telling people about your fantastic film, Cherry Future. Very, very cool. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Hello, everybody out there in the world.
Now, Paul, are you Cherry Future set in L.A. and whatnot? Did you grow up in Los Angeles, or were you a transplant? What's the background there?
I was born in Southern California, and I grew up in a town probably an hour outside of L.A., Ontario. And a lot of people think it's Canada. I'm not Canadian. I'm too dark to be a Canadian. And I moved to L.A., which, you know, I'd already been going as a kid anyways. But I eventually moved to L.A.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, as you're also a musician, and that's, you know, what the movie's about and whatnot. How did you get into music? Were you always a musical kid and a film kid, or did they both kind of happen? One led into the other. What's that background?
My mom was a classical pianist, and, you know, the culture I grew up in, you know, my dad was in the jazz, and I took up guitar when I was 14. So I was a musician first, but when you grow up in your household, or what your heritage is, what your surroundings are. So my parents had always had movies on, you know, the great movies and stuff and music.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the film stuff was happening at the same time, but it was really, I became a musician first, a guitar player. And then later on, for a while there, I was just a bass player just to get, because I was too young to be into clubs and bands, but bands always need a bass player, so I kind of snuck in that way. But I learned each instrument, I suppose, when I got older, it comes in handy when you start producing yourself and dealing with drums and beats and bass, guitar, and then turning into a singer, too. And what I had learned is the more instruments I play, the more control I had, because I'm kind of OCD and I would have more control of my own music and my destiny, and I wouldn't have to rely on a singer or rely on a guitar player. So I sort of, long story short, became a guitar player, singer, keyboardist too. But the film stuff didn't come to much later.
I gotcha. So music first, and which led into the film. Very, very cool. I'm a painter by trade, but growing up, all of my friends, it seemed up until I got into college, we're all musicians. And then, after college, I moved out to the West Coast, met a lot of independent filmmakers. all my friends are in bands or making movies. And it seems you're the type of personality that, like growing up, I know people in a lot of bands, but usually in every band there was like one guy or gal that was kind of that person. You know what I mean? That the one making sure everybody practiced, lining up gigs, you know, doing everything pretty much. Would you say that was kind of your background too? You were the guy kind of, you know, in the bands you were involved with?
Not in the beginning. I was the kid groups out of high school were, you know, you don't quite know what you're doing and you kind of fall into some order. And there was always probably too many leaders back then. But then you're at the mercy of, you know, you could get kicked out of a band, you know, something could happen,
right.
And or the bass player could leave. And so I became more guess it's like a business that they do everything in-house instead of relying on other people, because you know you don't want to be at the mercy of other people. That's probably one of the way I process stuff. And everybody's
right.
different, but I like to have control of everything, just because I don't. The less people you can rely upon, the you probably have a better chance of going somewhere and getting further. But then,
absolutely.
You know, one of you too is like that. That's four guys with four different ideas. There's less and less of those bands, but those are really rare. Those bands are really rare anymore in the Led Zeppelins and stuff. So I don't know. I considered myself more like I saw Prince do Purple Rain and the band thing and write, and I thought, ah, so one guy can do that. And then Sylvester Stallone is a big role model for me. Like, oh, this guy can act and direct and write. So why? I just said to myself, why can't I do this? But the film stuff, again,
right.
it didn't come to much later. It was by default. Like, we'll get into that later if you want. Why did that happen? You know? But you know, I love what I do. I loved watching films. We were not, our household was very American Italian. We didn't watch sports. We
right.
either gambled on horses or watched feature films, you know, and cooked and had, you know, and laughed and had fun. And,
right.
But there wasn't much sports in my house unless it was a maybe betting or something.
Right. I hear you. My fiance is Italian American. So every Sunday, man, I'm right there.
Yeah.
Sunday dinner, you know. Well, that's cool. That is cool. Now, let me ask you about the music. You also have a background in directing and creating music videos and really big names, too. I mean, really big names. Did that come post-movie or pre-movie?
That came, we're really taking a big chunk of years of...
Oh, I didn't mean to. Let's fill
no,
in the blank
right,
then.
No, it's all right, because I go back a little bit. When I started recording, Stu, it was around 1990, and I did demos in West Hollywood. But if you follow 1990, that's when Napster and all that started to come in, and the bottom of the music industry sort of fell apart. And then I had a development deal with A&M Records, and I did, I don't know how, it was kind of like, you know, Queen made their first record on downtime and a little bit of money. That's what I did. I had this downtime at A&M, would go in there at odd hours. And in my head, I was like, well, this is what Queen did. This is cool. This will work. Well, it wasn't cool because... when the record was done, they laid off all my guys were gone. The place was falling apart. The music business was falling apart. In a sense, I don't know if it was falling apart. It was just going through a big change where digital downloads and people were getting music for free. So I had the recording studio. I get this development deal in 96, bang out a couple of records, and I still need income. You know, when your records flop, you're not getting money. And if you were getting money, you're in debt to that money. So what am I going to do? I had an opportunity where I think it was Carlos Santana. Someone invited me to one of his video shoots, a strange with the Rob, what's his name? You know, that single he did, collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
I could see I'm really.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
I
someone had walked
about.
Away and said, and I already had studio background. Someone had walked away and says, hey, can you run Pro Tools? I got to go to the bathroom or get a coffee or something. I'm sure. Well, next thing you know, someone's asked me, hey, are you available next week to do work production on music videos? So that sort of got me into it. But I was already into, my dad had a photography studio when I was a kid, so I was already around lights, and I'd already been doing some extra work and got some acting work. And this is by default, just to pay my bills, but it was something that was fun.
Right.
So that's how that sort of came about. So to get to the film thing, so I had this recording studio, and all of a sudden, everybody had a studio, and nobody had money, and people were losing money in the music business. So I was sinking quick with this home with the recording studio. It was, you know, was dying out. And I guess by the grace of God, I got into film. And the film business is like 20 times bigger than the music business. It's way bigger. And I was lucky enough to get into production. And I'm one of those guys who I will watch and learn and absorb everything. And I will learn how you do your job because, again, you're at the mercy of the producers or directors to get hired, and like, well, I want to be a producer. I don't want to get fired because of this guy or that. So I learned everything about,
very
and also, the key thing is I was passionate about film, and I was really into watching how they were getting their shots and how they were dealing with the actors and how they handled the whole thing. And then the final product, I saw the whole process with like Jesse Torero, Chris Robertson. I worked with like some of the biggest directors, and I got to watch and, watched how did they speak to people? How did they act? How did they get stuff done? And I worked with Richard Donner. I was in Lethal Weapon 4 as a fireman. So I was just years of learning and surviving, like paying my bills and stuff. So, and I would take a break from music and, then we'd play again, and we almost got to deal with Lecter Records once.
Right.
And that fell apart. A lot of things fizzle out really quickly here. So,
but you didn't give up. So, you kept going, and that's a good lesson right there.
I kind of had no choice. It was survival to pay my bills, but also I didn't want to just live like month to month. I wanted to build stuff,
Right.
So eventually I got tired of, I did production with Gaga. We did the Guy G-U-Y video. It's like a mini movie. And I'd gotten some credits from her, and she was the director on it, and she put her own money into it. That was a big boost. Something just sort of clicked again, like, I can do this. I'm starting to get credits now. So,
right.
Which is, I don't understand. People thought, oh, he worked with Gaga. Maybe if he does my videos, I'll be famous like her. Well, no, it's not like that. I'm not the director. I didn't write her songs. I worked with her, we were like the elite.
Right.
Of some of the best filmmakers in the world. I've been around that. I learned, but eventually I'm just not into working for other people on production. So I bought my own gear and I started doing my own productions and made a lot of mistakes and shit, I bought the wrong camera. I got to get this one. I need a prime lens. And then you start getting, and you start learning how cinema photographers work there, or learn their craft, and that's what I started to do. And one of the first big clients I did a video. Now people ask me, how did you get into the film business? Oh, I don't know what to do. Well, the first video I did was for Melissa Manchester, and I did it for free. And I had already been working on her live show, and I had a relationship with her. And at the airports, I would play her little snippets of this video, and she was kind of blown away. She says, wow, this is really good. And I finished it out and gave it to her. I never made any money. And a couple of years later, I get a call from her manager saying, hey, Melissa wants you to direct and do one of her videos. We sort of worked out a budget and stuff, and I did that. That was my first client. So when you start getting clients, other people see your work, and I'm getting worked up here. I'm very passionate.
Nothing wrong with that.
Once you start getting a bunch of clients, it starts snowballing. You start getting more and more clients. So that's kind of how it happens.
Oh, that's fantastic. That is fantastic and so inspiring, because I know there's people listening to the show. I always say young bucks, but not necessarily young, maybe just people that want to get into the business. They want to be doing what you're doing, And your story is so different than, I went on this talent reality show or whatnot, and, I got lucky, after a lot of hard work. But it's you worked your ass off.
I'm just not that
and,
kind of – I'm not that guy who gets lucky. It just – that just never worked.
I'm not either. Right. No, I hear you. It's your story reminds me many, many, many years ago. I was dating this gal, and she was all into web stuff, websites and computer. And I said, I need a website. So she made me a website. Long story short, things did not work well. It did not end well with her. And so I went to my website one day on the computer, and it just said, Jamie's a jerk, really in really big letters on it. And I said, I need to learn how to do this myself so this doesn't happen in the future, And,
right.
Yeah, it's very – you're right. When your name's on the door, especially, man, you got to do it, And and I know you said, you were surviving, and that's – I'm sure that's true. But at the same time, a lot of cats – you know, after the first few things that didn't work out, there's so many people that just kind of say, well, I guess I'm moving back to Idaho or wherever, you know, or I'm just going to go do work at a gas station or something, or a record store or something, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong
yeah.
with that. But it is, if you're a passion, if you're a creative, if you're an artiste, you got to be doing it. You know, you're not happy unless you are. And sometimes even when you're not
yeah,
happy,
I
you're
would,
not happy.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
Metal Babe Mayhem is super excited about their newest venture with MBM Music LLC. With MBM Music, we'll provide artists with a full-service platform to be seen and heard by assisting with necessary products, services, and fashion, all in an effort to increase exposure, fan base, and income. For more information, visit us at mbmmusicllc.com. That's mbmmusicllc.com. You create, we promote, plug in to the network.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Glittering amethyst, energizing citrine, colorful fluorite, the other side of the sun, Earth's treasures brought to light. Since 1999, we have offered a unique collection of hand-selected minerals and gems for every budget, for novices, collectors, and healers. Visit www.tosots.com to view our wide selection of offerings and use coupon code ROCKS, that's ROXX, for 10% off your first order. Remember, TOSOTS.com, Earth's treasures brought to light.
Hi folks, Jamie Rocks here. Hey, if you're a big fan of cool historical books, like me, then you're going to want to check out our newest show sponsor, Michelle Albion, a fantastic author. She's got some really interesting, cool books out that you're going to want to check out. I'm a big fan of all of these. The Florida Life of Thomas Edison, The Quotable Edison, Quotable Henry Ford, Quotable Eleanor Roosevelt, and of course, The Quotable Amelia Earhart. Michelle's just very keen and very, very cool, and these are just very cool books. So check out her website. There's links to where you can pick these up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble all over the place. MichelleAlbion.com, MichelleAlbion.com, MichelleAlbion.com. Very, very cool stuff. Check it out, folks.
That's the thing. I'm kind of weird because I just don't let go. I keep going and going and because I'm excited about it. I was always excited about working with, you know, Barry Manilow or, you know, Jeff Tate, or I'm still excited about working with these people and I'm excited about my projects. A lot of people would just have worked with me and think, oh my God, this guy is crazy. He just goes and goes and goes. And he's, there's no way he's going to make this out of nothing with, or, you know, no money budget. Like, how is he going to do it? And I was always like, even since a kid, like, no, fuck you, I'll show you. I can make this Cadillac like brand new. If you just let me just stay out of my way and let me show you. And that got worse and worse as I got older. And like, you know, move aside. You're like, you're just a buzzkill, and you're not, you don't have the vision to do this. But I'm kind of weird. Most people would just say, screw this, I'm going home. I can't, this is too hard to work. They give up too easy.
Right.
And that's my biggest pet peeve is when someone said, well, let's just see what happens. And that makes me cringe, because if you walk into a meeting and you just say, oh, let's just see what happens. Like, what do you mean, let's see what happens? And I tell this to my
drive a check for see what happens. Right.
No, yeah, let's see what happens. Yeah, you're going to get a boot in the ass is what's going to happen. but this is also, I tell myself this, it's taken years to learn that when you go into a meeting, you should know what you want and what they're going to want. And you better make sure they get what they need. You should know everything about them, too. What kind of food do they like? What movies do they like? What kind of cars do they like? What do they like? Money? Do they in? Are they into? They just want to hang out. You should know what you're getting into, and you should know the outcome. Again, this has taken me years to learn. You should know that outcome before you even walk in, and you should know everything about that person. So if I walk into a meeting and someone doesn't know anything about me, I'm like, oh boy, here we go. This fucker didn't do any homework on me. That means they're lazy. They didn't really research me. They don't, and they're not really prepared. So why would I want to do business with them, you know, if they don't? I like the guy who walks in and just says, you know, I've had people come up, they know everything about me. I'm like, that's cool. That makes me feel good. I mean, wouldn't that make you feel good? If like, you know, like I've seen your paintings and stuff. I like your work. I've researched you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. And, so, you know, if you were going into a business deal with a bank or something and the people didn't know anything about money or anything, you know, yeah, that's probably not a good plan, you know? it just isn't. And especially in entertainment, because the thing that I think people that aren't in the business realize is there's 50 guys and gals lined up behind you ready to do it, you know, if you drop the ball. They're hungry for that opportunity, you know? And so you have to make it happen regardless. That's very good
still,
advice.
You know,
very
I was smart. Still the guy to go to set and be like, I would be really excited, like, oh, De Niro's going to be, I'm so excited to work with De Niro. And other people be like more concerned about, well, yeah, I'm going to make $500 today.
Right.
I'm going to be out business-like. And I was thinking, I don't
if I made
I didn't
50
think,
and
well,
made the contact of De Niro, whoa, you know, that's. You never know where that.
You know, in their defense, I was both things. Like, I'm going to make good money. I'm going to work with De Niro. I worked with Ray Liotta once, and they can smell the passion and they start to key in. If especially really talented people can feel energy, and Ray was feeling my energy, and we became really good friends. And I just worked with for like 2 days, and that's an example of. And you can't think like. Am I weird or something? Like, why am I so excited about this and other people aren't? And they just stay in their job. And I was always, if I was doing production, you would think I was the director, but the way I was talking and acting, but I just can't help it. I'm just an excitable person. And I don't mean to step on any toes. I'm just excited and passionate about it. And I had asked the manager of Melissa Manager. So I'm like, why does she want me? Why am I working? And she said, because she thinks you have vision. And another thing about us creative people is like we think everyone's creative and they're just, you know, it's like, you know, you ever see in like an old house and needs to be fixed up, we can look at it and visualize it like process in our brain. It can do the fence, it can paint, it can add this. And like a lot of people can't do that. And it's taken me a long time to learn, like a lot of people can't see, visualize things. So when I did Cherry Future, I had to shoot, beg, and spit and borrow to shoot scenes and put them together and then show people the outcome. And that's how I started to get people involved. I mean, the way I did Cherry was a lot different than I'm going to do movies now because it was my first feature film. So I had to keep doing stills and videos and showing them the quality of the work, how good it looked and how good the band was and the band footage. That's how I started getting my actors and stuff. Because it was in the film, like on a micro budget. So
right.
I was pretty resourceful,
the band,
like my dad taught me.
The band was going then while you were filming Cherry Future. I mean that was
correct.
Happening at the same time. Oh, that's you know, not only are you making number one, it blows me away. I'm so impressed and inspired to even have the vision to do a feature film because I mean. You know, this is, and I'm not putting anything down, like shorts or anything like that down, but I mean, this is a big thing. Let's make a movie wow, you know, I mean, compared to my world, I'm like, oh, we're going to paint a painting. You know, it's not, it's pretty simple compared to making a movie, you know, I mean.
Well, mind you, I was building confidence doing short little music videos. Yeah, I was doing the short little music videos were like short little movies. So I was building confidence and building a clientele. And I, to tell you the truth, I didn't want to put out another CD and like go around begging for people to buy it or show it to people. Or, you know, there's no really not much label support anymore. I couldn't do that anymore. I said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to put this really Cherry Future was disguising an album in a movie and just stretching out the scenes that pertain to each song. That's what Cherry Future really is. It's a story. It's almost a concept album because each scene goes into the lyrics of the song for each performance. So that's kind of how we did it. But I did a couple of practice shorts before I started Cherry Future. Cause I, you know, I was experienced in the music videos and, you know, in music videos, every once in a while, there's a little dialogue scene. So that's what movies are. But a lot of directors will experiment with cameras and effects on music videos because it's only 3.5 minutes and it's a small, you know, it's a small budget. No one's, it's really quick. So a lot of people in the, and I'd learned that to experiment in the music videos because you're getting paid, they're short. You can apply that to your knowledge when you get ready to do a feature film because I was taking mental notes when I did Cherry Future. I knew exactly what did I do, what I could do sometimes. The problem with Cherry is we had mostly a college camera crew or, you know, whoever was available. It was always someone different every day. And I'd have to oversee sort of, you know, people with not a lot of experience with cameras. So that's where I think the film lacks is giving it to people who were not, you know, they're not really sure. It's like I couldn't be everywhere. I'm in the scenes. I can't get behind the camera. You know, there was one kid that we were shooting – Billy Cox and I jam with Billy Cox and he's playing a 59 Fender jazz bass. Those are like $3,000 basses. And he wasn't getting it in the full frame. And I said, listen, I took him aside. I said, Junior, listen, that man's holding a bass. It's like $3,000. It's Billy Cox from Jimi Hendrix's band. You understand what I'm saying here? And I got kind of pissed and I think he understood. And then he started, you know, framing it better and stuff. You got to really capture this. Like, this is not a TV band. This is a real band here. And, you know, we're paying for that location. And, like, you better get that bass in there. And he did. So it was a lot of stopping and pulling them aside. Then I'd have really pro cinematographers. My friend Diego did a lot of their really good stuff. But, you know, it took 3 years to make Cherry Future and bring it all together. And a lot of the script was in my head, and I was – piecing it together. It was never a screenplay.
Well, I was going to say, you wrote this. Was the screenplay, I guess you just answered this. It changed as it and evolved as it went along, or did you have a basic outline and said, here's the direction we need this ship to go, but we might make some course corrections along the way, or was it pretty already written in stone before you even started filming?
Well, okay, so there's Motley Crue's The Dirt recently, right? And people are criticizing, oh, this wasn't in it. Well, that movie's almost 2 hours long, and their career was almost 30 years. So how do you – and then Bohemian Rhapsody, people were crying about, oh, you didn't get this. And, well, you know, you try making a movie squeezing 30 years into an hour and a half. That's what Cherry Future is. And so I had to take – I wanted it to come off more like – damn, this guy's going to get buried and he keeps getting back up. What's the worst shit that's happened to me? What? Okay, my mom gets killed. My mom dies. This happens, you know, or I get into a gunfight or I accidentally shoot myself or we, you know, Bridget and I are fighting and we can't get management labels. So it was a constant struggle, which is the real things that happened to me within I won't say how many years in the music business, but I tried to put the worst things in the beginning of the movie, and it sorts, and you just see this guy sort of emerge with all this shit on his shoulders, the band, the girlfriend, everyone's relying on him. The guy at the taco stand is rooting for him. It's kind of I kept doing scenes, and they didn't all work. We would shoot something like, you know, that doesn't mean anything. So I would have sections, I guess. And I would put all these sections together later. Like, you know, like, did you ever, were you able to watch the whole film?
I didn't get all the way. I'm about three quarters of the way. I ran out. For those who don't know, normally this isn't how this happens. Just one of these things that kind of happened this time. I got the copy of it a little late, and we've got a lot going on this week, ladies and gentlemen. Me and my
Okay.
fiance have our big engagement dinner this Saturday. We've got 80 people coming
Oh,
in from out of town.
congratulations.
Thank you, thank you. It's just one of them things, and I apologize, but man, I'm just really taken with what I've seen so far. And as a matter of fact, as soon as the show's over, it's going right back on because I got to see what happened.
Oh,
But
good.
I tried,
Well, let me
I
tell you
tried.
this.
I'm sucked in.
I'm losing you a little bit. Are you far away from the microphone?
Oh no, I'm right here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, I did take the highlights of what's happened to me in life, and we were nothing like the dirt. I was never into drugs or partying that hard. I never that wasn't our style or abusing women. It was not our scene.
Right.
The scene with Jimmy Fallon used to come see us play, and that was at the Cat Club. That's a true story where someone said, "Hey, this guy wants to meet you, Jimmy," and I had no clue who he was. And I went over there and met him, and he was really sincere. He goes, "Hey, man, you guys are really good," and repeated it a couple times. And I knew something. The body energy was like, "Who the fuck is that guy?" And I walked away, and all of a sudden, people are doing their photos with him. And I said, "Who is that guy?" And he goes, "That's Jimmy Fallon from SNL." And I, "Oh yeah, I kind of know who he is. The more cowbell guy, or Will Ferrell. He did those skits." So, those kind of things will give you enough gas to go another 2 years. So right after that had happened, Jimmy landed his own show, and I'm like, "That's who that fucking guy is. Oh my God!" And you know how talented he is. He's a really talented. He sings. He's smart. He can do like anything. And I go, "Okay, so a talented person tells you that you're talented. That means something. This is not like so that's." I normally don't listen to people, but people like that I listen to. So that's the little gems that you take from 20 years of being in LA, and you squeeze it into that hour and a half. So to answer your question, I was trying to, that's why there was no script. We would just shoot a scene and just melt, and I always wore the same thing in case I had to connect me walking out of a room into the night or something wearing the same thing. So I pretty much wore the same thing throughout the film, not knowing how we were going to cut it together. You follow me?
Right.
So that kind of explains. That's not a good way to do a movie. I would never do it like that again. You really want to be prepared and like shoot it in like maybe 2 months, not 3 freaking years. But we didn't have the money and the support to do. We just and I didn't have the name. I have a better name now because that movie's in 70 countries on Amazon Prime and iTunes. So. And then,
Nice.
it's in one of the top movies now. So I have a little bit more pull now. I'm like, shut up. I know what I'm talking about. Listen to me.
Write a check. No, I'm kidding. I've never had to deal with I have in other businesses, like I bought and sold some real estate and investment properties and whatnot, and I've dealt with investors on that level. But not on a creative level, like where you're making a movie and you're needing money, to make this happen, to get that camera or get that location or whatnot. Was that really difficult? Would you say that's the most difficult aspect of making the movie? Or is it more the technical
No.
stuff or
No, the people threw some money at us, a little bit of money, but I threw mostly my own money into it, and I was
gotcha.
pulling favors with the actors because the actors, they got to trust you. Like, this movie's going to be good for their career if they just be in and donate their time to it. And a lot of the crew were, like I said, college people, so they needed the college credits, and they would get credits for working with me. Lisa Schreffels, I love her. She's a producer at MGM now. We shot this like what it was 8 years ago. All the stuff we went through. So some people came out of it like learning from me, or the on-set experience.
That's
So
awesome.
yeah, I the hardest part was I think we the last there's a grand finale scene, and we needed to get a big auditorium with people, and it was like that's almost impossible to do without much money. But I worked it out. I won't take the story on the air here, but that was a year because we had a location set up, and I had a good connection because I had had some touring under my belt too, and so I had some connections with stages and people and stuff. And that guy got fired, so we had to scramble and find another place. And that took, I swear it took a year. That was the hardest part, waiting. And like, I needed the grand finale scene, or I couldn't complete the movie, you know? So I would say the waiting around for actors or money or getting locations was the hard part. So it must be great if you're Clint Eastwood and you have the name and the money and the power to knock out a movie in 2 months. That's got to be awesome. That's why he keeps working, and Tom Cruise too, you know.
Get out that cell phone. You know? Well, that's cool. Well, we've got tonight's episode, ladies and gentlemen, sponsored by MetalBabeMayhem.com. I got to mention them. We have a link to them up, MetalBabeMayhem.com. They've got cool accessories and shirts and all kinds of cool stuff for guys and girls. Get over and check that out. Now, when we were getting ready to do the show, they sent over some cool tracks. Now, all the tracks, let me ask you, these are all from the movie. Is there a movie soundtrack available, or can people pick these tracks up on iTunes or digital music?
We're more interested in people buying or renting the movie on Amazon Prime, but there's a Trouble in Heaven CD that we've been selling hard copies of it, and then there's an actual soundtrack, which is more classical and more eclectic sounding. And I did all that too. So there's two albums that have come from it. But I've been on the fence about Spotify, and I mean we're gonna do something, but the movie's most important right now. I could be wrong, but I still can only do so much because I only have like a part-time manager right now. So it's getting to that. It's coming there. It's getting there.
I gotcha. Well, let's play a track. Absolutely. And you did a whole, like the score CD also. That's, and you did that. Many hats, Paul. You wear many hats.
I know. It's kind of crazy now. You see, if you tell someone you do all that, think this guy's full of shit. He's bragging. So it's best not to say anything and just sort of do it. And like,
yeah, you show people. Well, you know, one of the things that I feel that I'm like you on. I love when people tell me I can't do something. I'm like, I need that rocket fuel, man. Tell me I can't do it because. I really enjoy showing them, that I can. Let's play. We've got a couple tracks to play. She sent these over in an order. I don't know if these are in a particular order, if we need to play these in an order, or what you prefer. We've got Chemical. I'll just read them off, and then you tell me. Well, we've got Chemical, Dark Skin Girl, Life Here, and Rain Parade. What should we play first for people?
Rocket Chemical.
Awesome. Here it is. Everybody, check this out.
Make me feel the hurt with all you would make dread.
Now it's Chemical, ladies and gentlemen, from the Cherry Future movie. We've got writer, director, producer, actor, all-around cool guy, Paul Gervaisi. Gervaisi, am I saying your last name correctly, Paul? I feel like I'm not.
Well, when someone says asshole, I'm like, what? What do you want? It's Gervaisi.
Gervaisi, there we go. I'll never forget it now. That's a cool track, man. Chemical, I like that a lot. Now, were these already existing tracks prior to filming, or were you inspired whilst making the movie? I mean, I know the band was already going and whatnot. How did it all fit into the film in the creation of these tracks?
Those songs were like the cream of the crop I had for like the last 20 years. So I'd saved the best songs for the movie and the best like recordings and the mixes. I'm like, okay, all these are going to go, you know, into the movie, and then we'll build the movie again. And we were building the movie around the songs. Follow me.
Cool. Right. It would go into it. That's smart. That's very cool. And you know, it's like creating a bunch of music videos too, and creating a whole scene, you know, it's like Pink Floyd's The Wall or something, like a concept album almost, you know.
Exactly.
Very.
And the only one
cool
I did when the film was done was Star Cruise for the credits. I don't know why Star Cruise is just an acoustic thing, and maybe it was I'm done with the movie, I miss recording. Because when you're doing a movie, you're like you're filming, and the band's not even rehearsing much. You're doing the acting, the actual production of the film. And there was like a few years, there was not much recording going on. So when I was done, I had a break. What do I do to relax? I write a song, Star Cruise, and shot a little video, and it was just me and acoustic guitar. And I'm like, oh, that's a nice song. Let's put it in the credits. So that was the only afterthought. The rest of the songs, some of them were already 10 years old and stuff.
Nice.
And some, like Dark Skin Girl, I'd written that when I had my deal with A&M back in 96, and written it and lowered it, you know, the keys. I did it probably five times. One of my ex-bass players said, damn, we should do that song Dark Skin Girl, but do it, you know, like with the new style, like the drop A or drop B or whatever it was. So that one really gets, you know, can tell. And that was based on a hip hop beat, but using this modern guitar, sort of like Deftone or Korn. That was sort of the idea of that style of writing. And
that's cool, man. That's cool.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
Support for this podcast comes from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, ranked one of the top cancer centers in the nation for the last 27 years. The doctors at MD Anderson treat more rare cancers in a single day than many physicians see in a lifetime, and treatment plans are tailored to an individual patient's needs, allowing more comprehensive and thorough care. To become a patient, please visit makingcancerhistory.com.
Hey guys, Jamie Rocks here. Hey, last year I was on holiday with my girlfriend Danny. We were at Disney World and having a great time. It's the happiest place on earth. And I dropped my vape, just like a Butterfingers, and it was a pain in the neck. They just don't have anything there to replace it and whatnot. So we had to drive 45 minutes each way to get a new one. And, you know, that's an hour and a half out of our day, man. But anyway, that wouldn't have happened because if I would have had this fantastic new product, the C-Ring. It's very, very cool. What it is it attaches to your vape, designed to protect your investment with comfort, flexibility while doing your day-to-day activity. What it does is it goes in there, you put your finger in there, and you hold it, and you're not dropping your vape, breaking it and whatnot. It's very, very cool. And if you need both hands, they have a lanyard you can hook to, and it's awesome. It's awesome. The C-Ring, you can find out more about it and pick one up at their website, www.thecring.com. Again, that's www.thecring.com. Be smart. Be like me. Get a C-Ring if you're a vapor. Very, very good. Oh, and hey, holidays are coming up, man. This is a very cool gift for somebody. If you have somebody on your shopping list that vapes like I do, get them a C-Ring. TheCRing.com. people know, too, our lines are open, ladies and gentlemen. The number to call in to speak to Paul if you have any questions or comments about the film or his music or, you know, all the things he does. The number is 347-850-8598. Again, that's 347-850-8598. And, Paul, speaking of Dark Skin Girl, let's play it, man. Sound good?
Rock it.
Here it is.
Rock it, brother.
What a track, what a track, Dark Skin Girl from the movie Cherry Future. Paul, fantastic. I love the guitar in that. I love it all, the bass and the scratching. Fantastic, man. Very cool.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Very, very cool. Well, it's, you know, it's so exciting. And it's one of the things I'm, like I said, I'm just so impressed is your perseverance. And tenacity, you know, you keep going, you get knocked down, but you keep doing it. And, you know, it's such a good lesson, no matter what you're doing in life, you know, like you said, a lot of people don't, you know, too much work.
I just, you know,
going on.
I just had this conversation with, that we were talking about, how music like music will wake me up in four in the morning, and I'll write down an idea. I'll have to record the song, and when I do an album, I'm good for a while. Like, it doesn't wake me up at night. It doesn't bother me. When I was done with Cherry, I slept good for a while, and now it's something wakes me up, meaning you couldn't stop if you wanted to. And if you produce stuff and create stuff, no matter how old you are, how successful you are, how much money you are making, it's fulfilling. It's keeping your mind in check, I guess. So
right.
I don't know if that's pretty out there, but it's taken me a long time to figure it out. Oh, it wants to get fed, and it won't go away unless I'm productive. So I sort of have no choice but to be productive in anything I do.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Right. Absolutely. I totally get what you're saying. And it's weird because creative people and people not in the creative business, I mean, they can appreciate what's done and whatnot, but I don't know if they really get that you have to do it. Creative people have to be doing something. And if they're not, and this is why, you know, it's funny because it's not funny, it's tragic, actually. You know, people get involved in other stuff, you know, sometimes real unhealthy stuff, you know, and everybody outside of that goes, oh, well, that guy had everything. You know, he had one of those Infinity. He was doing great. He had all these gold records and whatnot. And he's, you know, taking all this drugs and doing all this because he wasn't working. You know what I mean? Or wasn't working enough. Or her. I've seen that happen a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know about you.
Yeah.
I'm that way. I was at a party a couple weeks ago and somebody said to me, they're like, I was looking at your website. Man, 2015, you knocked out a lot of paintings. I probably did. I probably painted, you know, 250, 300 paintings that year. And, you know, they're like, well, what was going on that year, you know? And I said, that's the year my father passed away. And one of the ways I deal with trials and tribulation, like you, I throw myself into work. And that's how I kind of get through that. You know, it just keeps me busy, keeps me going. Now, you talked briefly a little bit ago, and I don't want to give stuff away from the movie too much because I want people to watch it. And, folks, we have a link to the Amazon Prime link where you can watch it right there. I want people to see it. You've had some pretty major stuff go down in your life, but yet you keep going.
Yeah, I look just like you and your dad. You just if I don't process, see, I'm, you know, the more successful you get, the more I guess you can be more transparent or honest with everybody. If I'm not productive, I get really depressed. If I'm not like making money or producing or helping other people, I work with an artist, a lady, Susie, and I help her with her videos and like her TV stuff and consult a little bit she's got like a team around her. My point is I'm productive. I'm working. I'm making this person feel better. And I feel good about being part of their team too. So
that's awesome.
I know myself, I'm not working and staring at the walls. Paul goes little Van Gogh-ish. You dig what I'm saying? So maybe, but I've learned it's taken years to recognize. I wish I could talk to kids about this, but it's taken a long time to recognize, like, oh, you're going for the downward spiral. You better pull up. That means write a song or go jogging and work with a client. Or, you know, do your work with Kevin Cronin or something. Pull it back up. That's just the way. And I don't care if someone calls me weird or whatever. Like, you're not me. That's how I process stuff.
Right.
So worry about yourself.
And that's how shit gets done. Right. You know. You got a feature film here, man, you know, and a cool band. You're doing all this stuff, you know. That's how that happens. Is you work, you know. That's you know. I sound like an old man. I sound like a grumpy old man, especially when youngsters, you know, they want it too quick. They want the end result too quick, you know. I grew up with a lot of my friends played guitar, and they all wanted to be Randy Rhoads or you know, Eddie Van Halen, whoever. It was, you can tell my age now by, you know, some of the people I mentioned. But that's what they wanted. They wanted that end thing. And I'm like, man, even back then, I was like, I think it took them steps to get to that place and a lot of work. You know, I don't think people just left their door one morning and, you know, flying around in planes and stuff. I don't know. You know, what do I know? But seems to me that everybody who's doing cool stuff works their ass off. That's all I'm saying. You know, you got to work for it. Next track we're going to play, Paul, it's called Life Here. Tell us a little bit about this one.
Well, I always start with a guitar riff first, and it's got a that one's sort of dark and mysterious, but I note that when I write a song, I don't want to do Van Halen. I won't do Randy Rhoads. I really don't do guitar solos with Trouble in Heaven. I play a seven string. I'm more into, I don't like the label stuff, but I, you know, like Korn, a Deftone, we more in that vein, more, and which I call modern or orgy. So I start with the music first. It's usually a verse and a chorus, and then little goodies in between, bridges and breaks and turnarounds and drum beats and stuff. So Life Here isn't easy. Give me something to believe in. So that was about really what I was going for, but I think I started with the chorus first. Life here isn't easy. Give me something to believe in. That's about just hanging on. So right. In the movie, the things that happen with Bridget and I and the other things happen, the gunfights and this and that. So that's the backstory of Life Here. But I always wanted people to hear stuff, and so, shit, that happens to me. I don't feel so alone. Because when I hear what other people had gone through, I'm like, oh, well, I did that too. Well, I don't feel so alone now. I feel like, oh, cool, they did it. So, you know, again, the Prince
and Sylvester
Stallone that sort of led the way. And, you know, like what Madonna did for women in rock, you know, like they kind of were leaders and trailblazed their own way. That's what Paul Gervasi does.
Nice, nice. Well, here it is, folks. This is Life Here. Check it out.
So you think you want to be me, and you think my life is easy. Fill my shoes, it's what you were scheming. No idea the price that fame will bring. Realize what you wish for might come true. Materialize a dream you just might somehow regret.
The media feeds on the humans we are.
another fantastic track, ladies and gentlemen. That was Life Here from the Cherry Future movie, which is available right now. You can watch it on Amazon Prime. We've got the link up to the show. On the line with us is Paul. Paul, this movie is a self-autobiographical film. When you first had the idea of doing the film, you know, all the stuff that happened to you, you've got all the things going on. I mean, was it a long process of having that idea to filming, or did it go pretty quickly in the beginning of it, getting the ball going with the film?
You know, I was talking to somebody, and it just came out one day. I said, I'm going to make a film, and inside I'm like, what did I just say? And I'm the type to do a fight and not back out. So I think the creative spark went off and something else said, why don't you make a movie to put the record in? What was your question again? Say it just so I'm clear.
Well, I was just saying like when you first had the idea, when you had that conversation and you said, I'm going to make a movie of all, everything's so crazy. I'm going to, you know, people say that a lot, you know, oh, I should write a book. I can't believe this stuff is happening to me. Most people just say that and then they, you know, move on with their day. They, you know, go to Wendy's and get a Baconator or whatever. They don't actually do it. You did, though. And I think that's fascinating. I'm very impressed with that. Was it a long, I mean, to have that epiphany, that moment of I'm going to make a movie, to actually making the movie? Was that a big, was there a chunk of time in between there? Or was it relatively quick how that started? From having the original idea.
The whole thing was an 8-year process from, like I say, doing music videos beforehand and doing a couple shorts and then like getting, actually building up the courage to go for it. And where do I start? And well, it was my life story. So I know what happened. I could, and then, like I said, just putting the most interesting things. Like, you know, I wasn't just making it for me. I was like, well, okay, people going to find this interesting, like the mother coming back as a ghost and giving him courage to keep going on, which was that a dream? Did that really happen? You know, you have to watch the movie to find out. So there was like an 8-year process from the start to finish, and then 3 years to make the film, another couple of years of trying to get it into film festivals, and we did get it into one, which helps a lot. And then we did a Tug, which is a theatrical release. It played in some theater, and it actually sold out here in LA. And I'm honest, there was a couple times like, what the fuck did I get myself into? Can I get over this hump? But I'm also the one, I'm like the underdog. I'm not the kid that wins the talent show. I'm like more like the guy that you don't think's gonna turn out to be Bono. You know, that I'm that guy who's like, you know, people don't notice me, and all of a sudden, bam! I'm like, I'm gonna power through this no matter what, no matter how long. Because I think my parents were like, if you start something, you better finish it, and you don't go backwards.
Right.
And I think parents don't teach kids that anymore. They're just so soft and like, okay, honey, you don't want to do piano lessons. Let's do motorcycles. Let's do gymnastics. And they're all over the freaking map. My parents are like, go get a job and after school, do your homework and then go get a job. If you want to do shit, you pay for it. So,
right.
And you think about it in those terms, you're paying for guitar lessons. And so it becomes more valuable. So
absolutely,
it's part of like, growing up, and a lot of kids are not, we're not like me. Remember, we're hard. My dad, you know, hardcore Italian, pretty iron fisted. This is not white wonder bread, the neighborhood I grew up in. This is, you know, we're olive skinned, a lot of cussing, a lot of fighting. I had a big family. We grew our own grapes in the backyard. We squashed those grapes and made this horrible wine. We were kind of strange, but every family's strange, got weird stuff. So, you find out later, we all find out, well, we're not that special. We're all like got our dysfunctions, you know? So again,
right.
I think having that, I remember I bought my first car with my own money, and then I wrecked it because I was smoking pot, and I ran in something, and my dad laughed and said, yeah, go ahead, fix it yourself. And it, but right. You know, at the time, you're like, well, little Tommy gets a new car. Like, you want that parent. But now I'm like, I'm self-sufficient. I did everything myself, which builds your character more, makes you a better person, more a survivable type person. So maybe that's – I was able to survive stomach certain things that some people can't stomach seeing gory stuff. You know, you have to be able to stomach well, I don't know when or where the rent money's coming from, but I'm going to keep trying and keep trying. And I can make ends.
Well,
maybe if I can juggle this and do this. And you can surprise yourself. You can get through stuff more than you thought you could. And I was that kid who were like, oh, no, I'm fucking doing this. I know I can do this.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. Well, and you're so right, because when you figure it out, you're amazed. When there's no choice, you're amazed at what you can figure out.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
Right now at Sprint, get any next-generation Samsung Galaxy phone and get the new Galaxy S10e to use on us with Sprint Flex Lease. The Galaxy S10e has a pro-grade camera for effortless pro-quality images. Visit a local Sprint store, sprint.com/Samsung, or call 800-SPRINT-1. Galaxy S10e, $31.25 per month. Second phone, $0 per month after $31.25 per month credit. Apply within 2 bills. Requires 2 new lines and 18-month leases. If you cancel early, remaining balance due. Excludes tax, subject to credit, $30 activation fee and restrictions. Offer and coverage not everywhere.
Aloha. If you have stress in your life or even anxiety and panic, I want to invite you to the Anxiety Coaches Podcast for a way out. The Anxiety Coaches Podcast is a relaxing and inspiring show bringing you lifestyle changes to calm your nervous system and help you heal. Heal anxiety, panic, and PTSD for life. We bring you 2 episodes every week. There's no need to walk this path alone. Join us for a relaxing, informative, and inspiring time and start your journey out of anxiety panic. That's anxietycoachespodcast.com. Aloha.
Hey there, my name is Paige Beatty, and I am the founder of Hats On and Hats Off, which are 2 separate companies but aligned by the same philosophy of raising cancer awareness and forming smiles. Hats On is a for-profit corporation that sells cancer-specific hats to be proudly worn by you in hopes of raising awareness. A percentage of the proceeds will be donated to Hats Off, which is a nonprofit corporation raising money to buy wigs for cancer patients who can't afford them. That's where we're forming smiles. I believe cancer has touched almost everyone's lives in one way or another, a friend, a family member, a friend of a friend. So please visit our website, www.hatsonhatsoff.com, to learn how you can help raise awareness and form smiles.
Rocks Gear, the online web shop of high-end luxury merchandise and products, all featuring original pop art paintings. From La Jolla to Miami to London, www.merch.jamierocks.us.
Hey folks, located in the hills of Tennessee, L'Apothecary Unique offers all-natural, organic, gluten-free skincare, hair care products, perfumed oils, medicinal salves, makeup, incense, and aromatherapy items, bath salts, and even much more, including something special for the fellows, like beard and mustache balm, astringent, and aftershave. Each item is made to order just for you. So check out LapothecaryUnique.com, spelled LapothecaryUnique. L'ApothecaryUnique.com.
You know, your car story cracks me up. I mine, I didn't wreck it. I learned that you can put too much oil into an engine. I thought the more oil, the better it would run. No. Yeah, that was a lot of dishwashing down the drain, man. Oh. But I'm inspired, Paul. I'm very inspired. You know, let me ask you this. In the film, you've got a lot of people in your life now. I shouldn't just say in the film. In your life, you had a lot of people telling you, well, this band's not going to make it. You're not going to, you know, and all of this. I mean, this was a big chunk of people, of negative people throwing negative stuff at you. And, you know, you were like, well, screw that. I'm doing it, baby. I'm doing it. I'm making it happen. Have you ran into some of those people now that after the making the movie and doing all of this and that, and kind of have your comeuppance moment, you know, like, well, see, there you go. You were wrong.
That is freaking hilarious, because I remember having a recording studio and, you know, making enough money to pay my bills. And occasionally, hey, we got a shot to get some songs in the soundtrack. And I won't mention the film. We submitted a bunch of songs to the soundtrack. It would have been really good money. And, you know, again, you're trying to get the more success your name has, the more work you're going to get. And the more people are getting, the better things get. Let's face it. The more money, the better. The more. Submitted a soundtrack. Didn't get it. Babyface got the gig.
Mm.
And recently, during people found out about Cherry and were, and did they come out of the woodwork? And there was a couple of people who were trying. The same people who turned me down were trying to get their clients' songs into my movie. And I didn't say a word. I just inside my mind, I can tell you what I like. These motherfuckers. Don't realize that I remember them. Yeah, I'm good. And I was, you know, I was polite. I didn't say, I just kept it myself. I'm like, no, I'll let you know. They gave me their card. So the table does turn. And you got to realize, it's common sense. If someone's giving you advice and you look at that person, you should investigate. Okay, so Joe Blow is telling me that I need to go punk rock and do this. And then you go, well, let me check out this guy's life. Oh, my God, this guy's quit everything he's done. A lot of band managers are clueless. They should not get involved in the creative side of things. They should be handling booking gigs or getting you on, you know, shows or tours, getting you a book, getting you press. And they know better to get out of my face with telling me who's in the movie, what songs to play, how to play them. I really don't listen to really anybody unless – I don't want to come off like I'm, because I'm not always right. I will go to someone, you know, I work with Jeff Tate, and Jeff Tate, I will ask their opinion of something, like, what do you think of this? That's an opinion I trust. That's someone who's proven. I have more respect for someone who's done stuff. Now, this is a tricky thing, because when you get success and your friend, and you get above your friends, they don't want to admit it, but they don't want you to get above them. It's human nature. You know, you're passing them up, and it's
right.
So it's can be a weird thing. And when you get successful, you have a target on your back. I mean, look at the president. He's got the biggest target on his back. So
Absolutely. Same
with successful people, there's going to be haters and people, they're upset that they quit and you did it and you kept. It's like the guy who you're hiking up the mountain, and one guy goes, oh, I'm getting mountain sick, I'm going back, you know, and he pusses out. And the one guy, Paul, keeps going, like, oh, fuck, he made it. I hate him.
That's right.
Like, you just made me look bad because you did so much better. And so, but there's people, try and find someone better than you and hang out with them. Even, again, people say, how did you get into business? I freaking worked for free. I went and helped them move their store. One day, I still do stuff like, you know, I'm working for, well, I'll just say I'm doing something for Kevin Cronin. I'm doing a lot of favors, and I'm learning from them, and I'm absorbing from how they strategize their tour cycles and how they do it and how much, you know. So try and find someone better than you or bigger than you, or, you know, always strive for that. Those are the ones who you don't really need their advice. Just watch them and find out how they do stuff. And find out what songs are more popular and why is this song affecting, touching people, and ask yourself, is this giving me goosebumps? Is this affecting me? So,
right.
Again, a lot of people I will not listen to, especially if they don't have a tracker. I'll just like, and I've been known to just walk away. I don't give a shit. I don't care. You don't mean shit to me. Like, you're telling me what to do, and you haven't done anything in your life. And those people will criticize too. So,
it's so true.
You just have to feel good about yourself. In my mind, I'm like, I got a movie that's doing pretty good on Amazon right now. I'm doing better. I think I'm pretty confident to do my next movie. I actually have another movie ready to go. It's about the little company in San Dimas.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought, because I'm fascinated by it.
The movie's finished, and there's just some legal stuff we got to get sorted out before we do a release. But we were trying to get out this summer. I don't know. There's over 70 rock stars in it. And again, people will say, well, how did you get all those people? And guess what? Just like I said earlier, I knew when I walked into the room with Slash, I knew everything about him before I walked in that meeting. I knew he liked Jeff Beck. I knew what kind of food he liked. I knew what kind of guitars he liked. I knew his style because I'm a musician too, so I can see what he does and how he plays his arpeggios and stuff. And he blossomed like a flower. And like pretty much all my interviews for the next movie, they had opened up. Steve Vai is in it, and he was tough at first, but he opened up towards the end. And Michael Anthony from Van Halen's in it, and it's like we'd known each other for years, but we have crossed paths. I've crossed a lot of paths with Van Halen, being a Southern California boy. So my recent friend is I got hooked up with Brian Head Welsh from Korn, and now I'm a big fan of Korn, and here is someone hooking me up with Brian, and Brian wants to do an interview, and I get to meet him, and we were like we've known each other forever.
That's a good Wednesday, man.
Plays a 7-string. We're just both sarcastic and smart-assy, and but really liked each other and kind of dangerous. And I think we drifted from your original question, but it's good entertainment, right?
No, but it is, absolutely. And it's so good because, number one, I want to see more of your work. And number two, I get to have you on the show again. when it does come out. So stay tuned for that. We've got a
Don't
link up
with a good
to the
time.
Curious. I'm sorry?
Don't threaten me with a good time.
I hear you. I'm the same way. Oh, man. I wanted to let people know we have a link up to the Facebook page of Cherry Future and whatnot. Cherry Future, facebook.com/CherryFuture dot movie. And you can get there. We have a link up. And I was telling Paul off mic, the cool thing about when we put the when the show ends and it turns into a podcast, we add the commercials and all that, and we put it out on all these different podcasting platforms and what have you. These links will follow. So if you're however you're listening to the show in the future, the links are there, baby. So I want you to definitely click on that Amazon Prime link and watch the film, and also click on the Facebook page and like and share the Facebook page, because chances are your friends are going to dig it as just like you do. And it's important, you know, it's part of the landscape of independent music and movies and film and all that. Meetings happen. Paul will tell you there's meetings, and there's usually a guy with a ponytail or something. And he'll say, what's the engagement? You know, as he lights a cigar with $100 bill. And that's what that is, man. You got to keep this momentum going. And if you dig somebody that's doing a project and whatnot, and you like and share their social media, it's so important. It helps out tremendously. And also, another thing, just while we're talking about it, when you watch the film on Amazon Prime, leave a review of that. Leave a review. That's good feedback there, man. And it people read those. So it's a good thing. It's definitely a good thing.
Write a good review.
Say again?
Write a good review, people.
There you go. There you go. Well, it is going to be good. One of the things I really like about your story, Paul, is it's relatable. Sure, I mean, not everybody's in a band in LA trying to make it and whatnot, but they have trials in their life. You know, everybody goes through this kind of, maybe not gunfights and whatnot, but stuff that is intense to them. And, you know, everybody likes a story like with a winner at the end. You know what I mean? I haven't seen the end of your film yet, but I'm betting it work. Things are good, and I'm going to enjoy it. You know, I have a feeling. Don't let
it's
me down.
A nice, happy, yeah, it gets better as it goes. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, you know, I know that because you're a fan of Sylvester Stallone like me, and one of my favorite all-time movies ever is Rocky. If I'm having a bad day, man, I put that Rocky soundtrack on, and it perks me up, man. It perks me up.
Yo, Adrian.
That's right. I guess it was Rocky II where she tells him to win, where he's going to give up boxing, and changes it all around for him. So I like that. I was just telling a friend of mine, she was like, man, you get up so early in the morning to work. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like Rocky, man. Only instead of boxing, it's painting. So there you go. So the next, this movie, the next film's in the can, just legal stuff happening. And we'll be able to see that soon. Very cool.
Yeah, there's, I can tell you this. Trouble in Heaven is the band in Cherry Future, and there is the new album's in the works.
Nice. Very cool. Well, it's going to be cool, too, because the perspective will be different. You know what I mean? And I think that I can't wait to see it. Oh, my gosh. Paul, it's been so much fun tonight having you on the show. Like I said, I can't wait to have you on again. We've got a final track to play, Rain Parade. Do you want to tell us a little bit about this before we play it?
So, being the OCD, ADD person that I am, I stopped, like, writing with anybody because when I put a band together, you know, you usually go through band members like Van Halen. Well, that's not a good example. But so I started to just write songs in case I lost a member, then they wouldn't have any legal obligation to them. But when Trouble in Heaven first started, the first basser was Chris Perez, and he came with a track and says, hey, what do you think? And usually I cringe or regret like someone bringing me a song because it usually sucks. But he brought me this track of just like a drum machine and some guitar and kind of roughed out. It was just music, and it was the beginning of Rain Parade, and I was like, oh, this is good. And I learned the chords, some little bit of complication there, some time changing. And I did my own Paul Gervasi hit on it with the 7-string, and we dropped it down to A, and it's quite modern sound, and it's really heavy. I even remember sound checking with that song, and the sound guy at the whiskey, this is freaking hilarious. He goes, hey guys, it sounds a little muddy down there. And I said, yeah, we tune really low. It's freaking muddy. And then things would literally break on the stage because everything was vibrating so much. And well, I was looking at that as, oh, this is
bad. I love
ass.
It.
It's cool. Like,
right.
If you go to see Korn, you're going to get some vibration. If you know, you're going to feel this everything move and shake and stuff. And that was more our trip. Like, oh, I like this. I've always liked funky bass and low end bass. And, even with hip hop and stuff. So Rain Parade has a really low frequency to it. And it's basically about don't let anybody rain on your parade, and not being arrogant, but just like, we all need to be special, and I think my writings, I'm trying to speak to people as in common folk too. Like, hey, we all need to feel special. Everybody wants to be a VP. Everybody wants to park their car where they're not supposed to. So it's kind of like,
right?
Yeah, we know everybody wants to be a star. Everybody wants a nice house. Everybody wants a nice job, and why shouldn't they? So that's what that song's about.
Oh, very cool, very cool. Well, here it is, everybody. Rain Parade. Check it out. And that was Rain Parade, fantastic track from Cherry Future, the movie, very, very cool. Paul, we were, oh man, what a good track. You were absolutely right. That's one you can feel in your chest. I like that, all that low bass and whatnot. Good, good stuff. Fantastic. Hey, you know, ladies and gentlemen, Paul and I were talking off mic, and, you know, it's interesting because there's so many of these types of movies. Motley Crue, the Dirt movie on Netflix, and Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, it's breaking all the records and whatnot. The up-and-coming Rocket Man. And then you've got Cherry Future, and they're right in there with the mix as well. And, of course, you can watch that on Amazon Prime. We've got the link up to it, so you can watch it tonight. It's fantastic. Paul, I mean, did you see this coming? I mean, did you see, obviously, there's a need for this type of film and whatnot, and you knocked this out. But, I mean, when you had this idea 7-8 years ago, I mean, not a lot of people were seeing that then, but you did. Very, very cool. I mean, were you aware that it was needed at that time?
Yes. I thought there were hardly any good music type. There's Jazz Singer, there was Star Is Born, and there was Purple Rain. And I go, there's not many movies about, and sometimes they were like really cheesy. Can't think of any offhand. Yeah, I felt like there was a need, and I remember telling, you know, I meet people and telling some of the gatekeepers, like, hey, there's a huge void of you know, I think with our type of music too, there's a huge void. It's not really being met. And there are bands who are meeting, they're getting their, finding their audiences and corralling them. And, you know, there's Metallica and Disturbed, which is, they've got it honed in right. But for me, I thought the movie was a way to reach the world, because when I'm in 70 countries, while I'm sleeping, my movie's working. It's grinding,
right?
Like on the whole world. And I thought, and I remember telling people, almost blue in the face, like, you understand that people are tired of cops and robber movies or murder movies, murder mystery, this and that, and hero movies. They're just, and there's a lot, still a lot of good movies, but it's just, hey, we have other stuff that's going on. And I always thought the template of Rocky and Purple Rain, there's not a lot of those type of movies, more working man down to earth and, or band type movies.
So right.
That was bothering me, that for me, I couldn't find that those meant that many movies. There's The Last Waltz, but that's sort of a documentary of a band in the studio recording. I liked The Jazz Singer. I loved Purple Rain. I'm trying to think what other movies really inspired me. I also liked The Danger of Easy Rider. So that's why we put the custom bikes in Cherry Future, because that's my, I like bikes. I'm a biker enthusiast, and those were all rental bikes we used. And there was like, I think I used 4 rentals. And so the reason, because I really like Easy Rider and I wanted that. There's just something cool about the music we play, the loudness of it, and a motorcycle engine roaring down. It just goes hand in hand. It's just a beautiful thing, and it's eye candy. So the combination of those things, and I get occasional, well, I get them daily almost, but, hey, your movie really inspired me. I love the biker stuff. Or it's someone zero ins on something that really they can relate in their life. There was a guy who was his business was almost going under, and he got recharged after he watched my film. And I was like, I really didn't make the film to be the Tony Robbins of preaching to people, like, never give up. I mean, do that shit on your own. But it's nice to know that a kid that gets depressed saw my movie and felt better. I see movies that, you know, in Linkin Park with friends of mine, really inspired me. They were just so good. And every time I saw a news article about them, I'm like, oh, I love those guys. It would inspire me to like go push the musical boundaries better. And you know, don't do a long guitar solo. Use a different tune and go super low like Rain Parade. And So, yeah, that's...
Well, it is, like I said, before this this kind of latest outcropping of this clump of really fantastic entertaining in movies and whatnot, I mean, it's been a couple years, you know, since Eminem did 8 Mile and The Doors and what have you. But, you know, music cultural... go ahead.
The Doors movie, I forgot that one. Oliver Stone, The Doors, that is like probably my favorite movie of all time. You know, that and like Goodfellas and Godfather and Bridge Over Quiet. That The Doors movie was, I always forget that one. That one's really inspirational because it was about a band, but it was done in a theatrical way, you know, like a play. It wasn't a documentary. It was like very, a lot of imagery, a lot of eye candy, and a lot of the songs bled into the story of the dialogue and the acting. So that was another big template. I'm sorry I forgot that one, but that was probably even bigger than Purple Rain.
It's fantastic film. Well, you know, and it's like I was saying, music is such an important part of everybody I know can tell you what song was on the first time they kissed a girl. You know, I mean, there's reasons music gets played at weddings, you know. It's very important culturally to people. And they used to be a show on VH1. They had a show years ago, the Behind the Music. And I used to watch every episode of that, even if I necessarily didn't really care about that particular, whoever they were interviewing or whatnot, or talking about, I should say. But I love all the behind the scenes stuff and the story of how this person got from point A to point Z, you know, and that's
right.
One of the really cool things I like about Cherry Future too, because here it is, man. You know, fantastic. Very, very cool, Paul. Very, very cool. And folks, get over to Amazon Prime. The link's there, and you can watch this tonight. I'm telling you, you're gonna want to watch it. Absolutely. Paul, thank you so much for taking time to be on the show. I know you're really busy, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And yeah, everyone go to Amazon Prime or it's on iTunes as well, and check it out. And if you like it, give it a good review. If you don't, I don't know you. But thank you. We love you.
Fantastic. Folks, we will see you next week. We're off for the weekend and got a lot going on this weekend. But we will be back Monday live, and we're going to be talking to a filmmaker Monday, Eduardo. Costello, he's done a new movie, a sports movie called Worth, about MMA, you know, kickboxing and whatnot. So we're going to be talking about that on Monday. So we'll see you then. Again, Cherry Future, you got to see it. Have a good night, everybody. And thanks again, Paul. Keep doing what you're doing, man. You're real good at it.
Thank you, brother.
Good night, everybody.
This has been pop art painter Jamie Rocks's Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. It has been executive produced by Jamie Rocks, recorded at his studio in Deerfield Beach in South Florida. All rights reserved by Pop Rocks Limited for broadcast on Blog Talk Radio.
Estás escuchando Jamie Rocks de Pop Rocks Radio. Manténganse al tanto.
Hej, det här är Hicks från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rocks Radio med Jamie Rocks.
Blog Talk Radio.